be bold and be brave and just go for it.
As photographers, we are always looking for powerful images that will hold time and place, that will draw people in and symbolize something universal, something shared, something emotional.
Everybody needs to see what's going on everywhere. Pictures just stand out. This is how we remember.
Insights, kits, and the conversations that matter with the world's leading photographers and filmmakers in Shutter Stories.
It's been described as revolutionary and pioneering. I'm talking about Canon's new RF 5.2mm f2.8L dual fisheye. It's a groundbreaking lens that brings 180-degree VR to your EOS R5. Hello and welcome to Shutter Stories. I'm your host, Ilvi Niokicin. And a little later on, I'll be joined by director Mary Matheson, who will share her experience of using the new VR lens and of course what its arrival means for the wider industry. But first, I'm talking with Canon product specialist Mark Fensom and John Morris, who are here to discuss this exciting new lens and offer technical insights into what it can do. Also joining us is Rowan Johnson, a director, DOP and managing director of South Point Films, who specialize in corporate video production with a focus on VR. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi.
Hello.
So Mark, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little about the EOS VR system?
Hi, yes, of course. This is really exciting for us. It's a pioneering new virtual reality system that's consists of a compatible RF mount camera, like the EOS R5, a dual fisheye L-series lens, and some VR software, which we'll talk about a bit later, I believe. But basically, the whole point of this is, the aim is to simplify the whole stereoscopic 180-degree VR content creation process, all the way from like setup and to capture and post-production, enabling more people to be able to create more content more easily.
Yeah, I've made VR in the past, and I always had to carry like two cameras, and it was also difficult to stitch the images together or the video, and seems like this is the solution to all of that, right?
Correct, yeah. That we try to aim at all components of the whole process to simplify it, to make it a lot easier, smaller, more compact, lightweight, and just a lot quicker to be able to produce the content. Let's say from setup, it's as easy as just putting the lens on, all the way through to post-production, where the software is very clever and intuitive and does a lot of work for you.
Just about the lens, what does it look like?
Yeah, so traditionally, as you might say, you would use two cameras, maybe with two sensors, two lenses, or nowadays there are some all-in-one sort of cameras, but they still have two lenses and two sensors. This particular situation is using the EOS R5, and it's the same normal mirrorless camera as you might use and can still use for your standard stills photography and video shooting, but you just add on this L-series lens, and it's quite unique in the sense that it's able to have two lens elements at the front but a single lens mount at the back, mounting onto the camera with two output going onto the sensor.
Oh, wow. Sounds amazing. Who will be using this?
So the applications for this is quite wide and far-reaching, aimed mainly at existing VR production companies and content creators and professionals. They'll be shooting anything from pieces of content for museums, various education and training type videos, natural history, documentary and travel, in corporates and events. So it's really wide. Wide usage and quite appealing, yeah, where you'd want to shoot real life, very immersive and engaging and memorable content, because you're trying to instill some kind of emotion in the viewer, and VR and virtual reality is a great way of doing that, and that enables great memory retention of whatever you're trying to tell or the message you're trying to get across.
Amazing. Well, I really want to start using it. I had an exhibition in 2019, and it was a really beautiful exhibition, but I really don't have nice pictures of all the works hanging there because I wanted to do VR, but I just didn't manage to kind of figure out how it all worked with the VR cameras. So this would have been perfect at that time to just photograph my own show and see what it looks like. Yeah, I can definitely see it will be very popular.
I mean, it's so compact and easy to use and just so quick to set up. You don't really have to think too much about what you're trying to do and how you're going to go about shooting it. You can just take the lens along with you, and if you've got an opportunity or want to shoot some content, you just put the lens on, set it up in the normal way, and start shooting some VR.
Amazing that this will be possible on the R5. That's the camera I'm using as well. So this is really cool that this is now possible. So let's go to John. What is it about the EOS R system and the EOS R5 camera that makes the Canon RF 5.2mm f2.8L dual fisheye lens possible? Like, what is the technology behind it?
Well, it's a combination of things, really. When we introduced the new system in 2018, we launched with a new mount, the RF mount. And we said at the time that because the mount design is changing with introduction of the mirrorless system, we would be able to create new types of lenses compared to what's gone before. So that means that we can make things like more compact lenses, higher quality lenses, and lenses that can do something extra that you might not expect. And this is one of those types of lenses. It's one which, in the market, people thought, wow, this is not something I've not seen before. And it's because of the design of the mount allows us to make lenses like this. And the characteristic is that it's got wide diameter and it's got what's called short back focus, which for the optical engineers in Canon Inc. gives them kind of a world of possibilities when it comes to lens design.
Can you describe it a little bit for people who haven't seen this lens?
Yeah, I mean, visually from the front, it looks like there's two lenses in one. And it's got quite a wide front made of two fisheye lenses. So it's like you're looking at two lenses, and the lens projects two separate image circles onto the sensor of the camera. And it does that by using two fisheye lenses, but also a folded optical path. And that projects onto the sensor, which in the R5 is an 8K resolution sensor. It can capture 45 megapixel stills, but 8K video. And that gives you a left and a right image circle. And it allows you to sort of capture amazing quality. But it's funny when you see the output, because it doesn't look like a normal image. It looks like two spheres. I don't know, Mark, whether you could describe it better.
Yeah, so you can see it on the back of the LCD when you start up the camera. You do have two circular fisheye images on the back, both left and right. At the time of viewing on the camera, they're actually right eye and left eye in that order. It's just purely about the way that the camera captures the image inverted, then you have to rotate it around and you see it in the opposite direction, which then gets corrected in the software and gets split, which I know we're going to talk about a bit later on.
If I would be using this dual fisheye lens, what would be the ideal distance for subjects kind of to be away from this lens? Do you have to film really closely, close by, or is it similar as my normal? Like if I would be using the 35, for instance?
So it is a little bit different in how you shoot with this type of lens, because in virtual reality and shooting with this type of lens and the huge field of view you have, it's like, literally, it's meant to be like placing you in the environment. So you are seeing things as if you were there yourself. So you can't really sort of zoom in into an object far away, so you need things sort of fairly sort of close to you to see them sort of clearly, otherwise they'll appear a long way away, as you would do in real life. So it really mimics how you sort of see things in real life. The interpupillary distance of the lenses is 60 millimeters, so that's similar to the human eye, sort of fairly average. That it sort of varies from a little bit below to a little bit more than that, depending on who you are, but that's gives you a very natural sort of look and field of view. So, I mean, this lens is quite good in the sense that you can focus down to as close as 0.2 meters. So you can get very close to sort of subjects or smaller objects and things as if you yourself are going close. But that does also mean if you've got something, I don't know, you're feeding an animal and it's coming close to you, it might feel as if it's coming into your sort of personal sort of space. So you have to think about what you are filming, how close you get. but the 3D effect from it, the depth perception you get from this stereoscopic lens, is maximized from about 0.5 meters to 2 meters, which is, again, similar to how you would be a normal human sort of vision. And then from there onwards, it sort of goes down a little bit. And so past 6 or 10 meters, it drops off a lot sort of more. But it is, you know, say quite natural in how it represents your viewing, so it feels comfortable to the viewer when viewing it later on. The other considerations when you're shooting is that obviously you have to keep the camera quite level.
Yeah, that's what I wondered about. You have to keep it straight, right?
If you've got the camera tilted slightly and somebody's viewing on the headset and later on once you've produced it and the camera's tilted, they're going to feel rather drunk or a bit uneasy because they'd be sort of tilting off to one side. So the great feature on the R5, it's got an electronic leveler and you can use that to really help you level the camera off in the viewfinder or on the back of the LC screen. That's a great tool. I'd definitely advise using that. And that you should also try and keep the camera about head height. Now, I'm quite short, so it depends on your height as to what you feel head height might be, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
Because that also gives you a natural sort of field or viewing position. I mean, if you're seated and you want the viewer to feel as if they're seated, then you place him in that type of environment at that level as well. So, yeah, you have to think about, yeah, as if you're really there and what are you sort of seeing, and unnatural views or angles, positions can feel a bit uncomfortable, a bit weird, unless you put some sort of context within like the shooting of it.
And John, do you need to use a tripod? Because I can imagine now what Mark is saying. I mean, it has to be kind of level. Yeah, it's quite important that the viewer later on doesn't get seasick. Or can this lens also be used handheld?
Well, we've been using it. Tends to be on a tripod or a gimbal.
Yeah.
And that's for a number of reasons, really. First of all, you need to be careful about how wide the lens is, because it is a very wide field of view. So you have to be careful about composition and what you've got in your frame. And so we've tended to set it up on a tripod for specific fixed shots, or if you're doing a bit more action, then gimbal will keep it steady and you can still control what you're shooting. And I suppose you've got to think about the viewer, like Mark was saying, both in terms of height and are my horizons level, and to avoid camera shake as much as possible, because you've got to be careful that people are watching in a headset and you don't want the footage to be shaky at all.
I think it's really going to be interesting when filmmakers and photographers are going to use this dual fisheye lens, because they will have to, I mean, they'll need to learn that you actually have to be mindful of these things. So I think this episode will be super helpful for people who are listening now and thinking, okay, I want to try it out. So it's good to know that, yeah, you have to be mindful of certain things when using this lens, right? You don't want your feet to be in, or your tripod to be in, or people to get seasick.
Yeah, it's a really interesting sort of journey to create this kind of content, and a lot of people are looking to create different types of sort of experiences, and that's what the VR system is all about. It's about immersing people in what's in front of them.
Yeah.
And being different from what's out there. So yeah, completely.
Yeah, and also I'm in the photojournalism field, documentary, and it becomes more and more important, but also more and more difficult to engage people. But when you can actually, I mean, give them a VR experience where it seems like they are walking through a place like Kabul, or, you know, like there are certain things that are very difficult to show in images sometimes. It's amazing that VR opens up this whole new world.
Mark talked about earlier some of the use cases for a lens in a system like this. And one we were very interested in was sort of museums and natural history.
Yes, 100%.
So bringing experiences to visitors of museums where you've shot the footage, obviously outside the museum, but somewhere that you can't visit.
Yeah.
And if you can put a headset on somebody and they can be transported to that environment and see the kind of immense nature of what's being shown, that's a real value. and something completely different.
No, 100%. So can you maybe explain a bit about the advantages of recording onto one sensor?
I think the primary advantage is simplicity. We talked a little bit about, with the conventional approach, you'd be looking at separate cameras side by side, and the need to make sure absolutely that they're both set to the same settings.
Yeah.
So you have that consistency between the left and right images, and you have to lock them in every way, exposure, white balance. You know, that's tricky because you've got to do it all the time and be mindful of both cameras. So by projecting two images onto one sensor, that's immediately simplified because you've got one camera capturing both images left and right, one file coming out of the camera without the need to synchronize. So you just set the camera once it's set up, away you go.
And it's becoming one file, right?
The camera produces one file, which you then edit and convert in the next stage of the process. So I think for a lot of VR productions, that's important because they're going to be much more efficient in the use of time and technical setup as well, making sure, you know, every single shot, the camera's set up correctly, they've got the right technical setup before they hit the record button.
So Mark, can you tell me about the optical design of the lens?
Yes, this lens uses quite an innovative folded optic design, including a couple of prisms, which makes the whole lens itself very compact and easy to transport and use. But there are some other considerations with this lens itself. Because, you know, we're talking about an L-series lens, we're talking about the R5, the 8K sensor, and the image quality that the R5 can produce, and what we expect from an L-series lens, this lens does have to conform and produce to that same high professional standard. And one of the key things is to have edge-to-edge performance on a fisheye lens, which can be quite difficult to do. It takes a lot of expertise, knowledge, understanding, and also engineering capability to get the that quality out of all the optics. So on this lens itself, each of the two lenses that are on this particular lens have great edge-to-edge performance and sharpness. And that's particularly key when you come to do the post-production side. So I think I said earlier that it projects two circular fisheye images onto the sensor. And when we come to convert those circular fisheye images into an accurate rectangular projection, it kind of remaps and stretches out that fisheye image circle into two side-by-side square images. So this is a standard rectangular projection, two square standard side-by-side images. But by doing that, you are stretching or remapping those edges of the circular fisheye image more than in the center. So it's those edges that really have to be very good indeed, and is actually the hardest thing to do in lens manufacture.
The edges of the image, kind of.
Yeah, it's always one of those things where lens manufacturer is difficult to get the edges of the lens very, very sharp. They always tend to tail off a little bit. And particularly with fisheye lenses, you're going to more extremes of doing things. But then you're also doing an extreme sort of more conversion on those edges than towards the center of the lens. So it makes it even more important that the edges of the lens are sharp too. So Canon's lens design, manufacturing capability, the use of two UD elements strategically placed towards the back of the lens arrangements, so two UD elements per lens, help to give that edge-to-edge sort of sharpness that is really critical for a high-quality end result in the image when viewing on a headset. So that's one of the sort of key things that we had to try and do with this lens, as well as trying to make sure that we could shoot well in low light conditions by giving it an f2.8 aperture capability. And then one of the other really sort of cool things is the use of SWC coating or sub-wavelength coatings on the inside of one of the elements of the two front elements. And this...
What does that do?
This is really good at reducing or significantly reducing ghosting and flare. And this is probably one of the banes of virtual reality sort of shooters is, of course, they're having to shoot a lot of the time with fisheye type lenses, you know, when they're doing this type of sort of format. Then, you know, you're very likely to get flare and ghosting coming in the lens because you've got bright lights, I mean, the sun particularly sort of coming in and then hitting the lens, and it's, you know, it reduces the overall quality of the image quite a lot. So having this type of coating on there really helps to up the quality, and also when you can shoot, because, you know, if you're shooting, you know, in the morning or evening, but you're facing the wrong way, you'll either see a long shadow, so you can't really shoot then, or you have to turn into the sun, so you don't see that shadow, but that's when you get the ghosting or flare.
You have the flare.
Or yeah. You try and shoot at midday, and that really reduces your chance or when you can sort of shoot. So having even just this technology in terms of this very special coating that Canon produces, which is extremely effective, really helps the content creators free up when and how they can sort of shoot and still maintain that very high image quality.
Amazing. And I never really thought about when you are shooting early morning. I mean, usually I like to shoot like away from the light with the sun in my back. But of course, with a VR lens, you can't really, because you're in your own shot quite easily, way more easily, right? Oh, I'm learning a lot here. Okay. So one of the issues that people often have in creating VR content with multiple cameras is, of course, the differences in exposure and in image quality. So how does the dual fisheye lens solve these kind of challenges?
So the great thing about this camera, it is one camera. You've got one set of settings, which are spread across both images because it's just the one camera, so that's easily synced, and it has the same sensor with the same image characteristics. So if you had two cameras or two lenses going to two separate sensors, each of the sensors, even though they may be supposed to be the same sensor, they do have slightly different characteristics and color rendition to them. So having the single sort of sensor makes sure that those characteristics are just the same by default because it's the same sensor, and then the exposure is also rendered in the same way. Also, the dual fisheye lens has twin EDM motors, so electromagnetic diaphragms. So these control the aperture, which are very finely controlled and finely synced together to make sure the exposure is kept the same as well.
So just from my understanding, if you're talking about these two motors, so it's the one lens, but it has two sides. And are both of these little motors in both of the in the left and the right part kind of controlling the aperture? Or how should I see this? Or is this one in the one base of the lens?
It's correct first time around. So it has two apertures or two aperture motors, let's say, for 1 foot each lens. So they do have to be synced and accurately controlled together to make sure or ensure that the exposure or the light coming through each of the lenses is the same and the apertures are exactly the same as well.
It's amazing. Sounds like so much technology into one lens.
It's amazing how much they'd be able to cram into such a small, compact lens that without sort of seeing it, you don't realise how compact it really is for the type of lens that you've got and how well they'd be able to sort of manufacture that. But that's Canon's core technology, so they do this well.
Yeah, they know how to do this. So to both of you, what were some of the key considerations when developing the EOS VR utility software?
Well, it's a key component of the system in total, because you've got the image capture side where you've got the lens and the camera and the single file coming out. But so once you've done that and we've simplified that part of it, the next part is editing into a usable format which people can view. And this has traditionally been an area of complexity as well, because if you've got multiple files coming into the workflow, then you have to edit that down to a single file. So the overall objective of the system was to provide a utility to do the conversion and also integrate into Adobe Premiere, because not everybody uses just one utility. Of course, you've got a range of software out there to accommodate. And the other thing on the software side was to make capture easy as well, because I was talking earlier about seeing what the camera is seeing in real time. So I guess, Mark, you could talk us a bit about the VR utility itself and how it works.
Yes, of course. So EOS VR utility itself is extremely simple to use. So when you get the single file from the camera, so normally you might have two, you only have to have one in this one, you can select it within the EOS VR utility, and it's just a single window application where you've got all your files down the left, you've got your metadata, and then you select the file, and it'll bring up your circular fisheye images, where you can then select it to do the echo rectangular projection for you, and it'll try to auto align and do everything as well as it can. And if there's any slight horizontal corrections you need to do, there is pan, tilt, and roll functions there to align the horizontals or fine tune them, say, if you need to. But it's at this place where you can just play the image file just to make sure everything's okay, select your in and out points, and then just simply go to export, and at which point you can select your resolution or your file format you can output to. So anything from a 10 or 16 bit DPX file to a standard 8-bit MP4 or various formats of ProRes if you shot with Canon sort of log. Then those will output as a single file with your metadata as an echo rectangular projection, which can be either put into straight into your headset to view that single file, or you can just transfer it straight to Adobe Premiere Pro and into your timelines. And talking about Adobe Premiere Pro, there is also a plugin. So the plugin for this, once that's installed, you don't even need to go through this process at all. You can simply open Adobe Premiere Pro, go to the files, import them, and they'll import directly into your media window, already converted to an echo rectangular projection with the left and right eye sort of switched over sort of for you. So you don't need it to do anything there apart from put it in your timeline and carry on and edit as you would do normally, and great.
This is so amazing.
It's really simple. It's a one-click system each way. It's so simple. You don't really have to do anything at all. Whereas before, you'd have to align images and color grade the different left and right images. And it's not there anymore. You just need to like grade just the one side if you want to.
Wow, what a huge difference! You don't have to be a whole VR expert.
Not so. It's just taking all those barriers away and a fear of how do you do something, and even being bothered to try and shoot something because it's just too difficult or too time consuming. You don't have that anymore. Not in terms of setup and shooting and then bringing in and doing the computer work just to do the conversion in terms of any expertise or trying to fine tune things in terms of alignment and synchronization. All of that's taken away from you. You just need to do the conversion of the file and bring it into your non-linear editing application for your grade and editing for final output.
Amazing. Rowan, you've been listening in. It's becoming a lot more simple or easier to work with VR now. And you've worked with a sample of the dual fisheye lens. Can you tell us what your experience was like and what this lens will change for you as a VR maker?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, I was really lucky to get my hands on a working sample of it. And so I think what would be probably helpful is if I just give you a little context of my experience with VR generally, so that then when I explain how I think it will fit in, I can then, you get where I'm coming from. So I've been working on a variety of projects over the past, I think really the past sort of 5 years, that have involved VR content in some way. the vast majority of that is sort of your standard sort of tour type things, where I go to a client's offices, or a member of my team goes to the client's offices, and we set up a 360 camera and we go around and we take videos and we take photos and basically produce these little VR tours that people can click and drag around, similar to like lots of maps apps and that kind of thing, where you can go into a location and see what they've got there. But we've also done a few sort of creative VR projects as well. A few years ago, we did a campaign for a local university who wanted to use VR to show off all their different facilities to prospective students, where they were going around to different road shows around the country with VR goggles for people to put on and really get a feel for what's going on here. So from my perspective, I'm looking at a lens like this of how it can fit into my toolkit as a corporate video producer, where we do all kinds of things. So VR is one part of what we do, but a lot of what we do is sort of normal filming. We do a lot of promotional videos, training videos. We do live streaming and sort of everything in between, really. And so for me, versatility is the key thing. And certainly with a lens like this, just off the offset, I mean, first of all, I mean, it's a Canon L series lens. So obviously fantastic quality off the bat. But the thing that's really exciting for me about it, and what I was excited to kind of do when I got my hands on it, was obviously using it with the R5, which we've had one of those since the beginning of this year, which has become a really versatile tool generally for us as a business and for me as a creator, because it's so small and lightweight and so high quality. The majority of projects that we work on over the years, we've filmed with Canon C200s, which have been our go-to cameras, and before that C100s. And we bought the R5 primarily because we wanted a better stills camera for the times when a client sort of turns around and says, hey, can you take a few stills of what we're doing because we need something for the brochure or whatever. I'm not a photographer, but obviously when you get those sort of requests and you've got a camera in your hand, it's really hard to say no.
And
obviously don't want to say no a lot of the times. You know, you want to always do the best thing for your clients. So obviously the thing that's really exciting about this lens is that it works with this camera we've already got, but it turns it into an even more versatile hybrid production device. It fits into a system that we already use, and it works the same way as everything that we already use. So I think the important context bit that I forgot to mention is that, of course, over the years, because this lens isn't something that we own at the moment, and obviously only got hands-on with it very recently, we've been using VR solutions from other manufacturers. And while they've done a good job for us over the years, I certainly don't have many complaints about a lot of the systems that we've used. The thing that's really exciting about this is that it's something that it's just another lens for our camera that we're already doing work with. We're already filming with it. We're already taking photos with it. It's in the kit bag on most of our jobs. And just being able to put a VR lens in the bag as well, that is very exciting from the perspective of myself as a versatile filmmaker, well, video producer, I should say. Filmmaker's a bit a grand title, but as someone who makes video, you know, and wants to be versatile, it just kind of extends the functionality of the Swiss Army knife for me. That is the R5.
Yeah, that's a good name for it, Swiss Army knife. Rowan, do you feel this will open up more opportunities for creating VR content?
Oh, undeniably. I mean, I think, as I said, I mean, the thing for me is in what I do is being able to be there for my clients with kind of whatever they ask for, whenever they ask for it. And for example, we've been doing a lot of videos recently that are tours of places, obviously due to the pandemic. There are lots of places that are less comfortable with welcoming people in, or they work with a lot of customers or suppliers who are overseas who are finding it difficult to physically visit their premises, and they want something professional to show people what they have there. And so for the most part, a lot of these projects have been filmed with an R5, with a fisheye, a very wide angle lens, not a fisheye lens, but a very wide angle lens, going around on a gimbal. And the immediate thing that I thought of when I saw this lens was, how amazing would it have been to have used the dual fisheye lens to create VR content? While it's not something that these clients have specifically asked for, from my perspective, it kind of future-proofs it. One of the undersold aspects of VR content is actually its backward compatibility with, and I say this in quote-unquote normal video, is that in a lot of instances, you can kind of take that footage and bring it back and do things like repositioning in post. So rather than having to bake in like a gimbal move or something, you could potentially do that sort of thing in post instead. And then obviously the thing for me is that for my clients, I always like to kind of give them a little surprise and delight. You can always kind of be like, oh, look, we've also done a version that if you watch it in a VR headset, it will work and it will look, you know, it's in 3D. It, you know, you put it on and it feels like you're really there. Even if it's not something they want right now, a lot of the time with, I find that with clients, you know, they don't necessarily come to you saying, we want something new, we want something different, because nobody really wants to be the first adopter or an early adopter when it's like their budget on the line or their reputation within their company or whatever on the line. Whereas with something like this, you can basically slip the lens on, do it, and then show it to them later, and then they will buy in because they'll be like, wow, that's amazing. And if they don't like it, then it's no sweat off your back, because, you know, as I said, with a lot of VR content, you can pull it back for other purposes and reutilize that footage in different ways. So that was something that I sort of was really excited about when I saw this. Obviously, the other thing with, and you guys touched on it earlier on, but with other solutions, I mean, you're looking at bringing something completely different along to do the job. So the VR systems that I've worked with in the past have been dedicated VR cameras. And while I think, you know, certainly with a sense, because it's a 180 VR lens, we'll still have a need to keep those cameras around for full 360 when that's the requirement. Certainly for you know, getting stuff that the stuff that isn't. In the past, creating this sort of VR content, we've had to use dedicated VR systems, so VR cameras. And while there will still be a need to use those for some instances, like for full 360, obviously this is a 180 VR lens, the great thing about this is that it is just part of the general toolkit that we can take out and about. So as we talk today, tomorrow morning, I'm going to be flying out to Turkey to do some filming for one of my clients at a factory. And it's similar to what I just said. They've got a supplier out in Turkey who they want to film their factory and all their facilities so that they can show their customers back here. Because obviously it's really difficult taking people abroad at the moment due to the pandemic. And so we're going there and filming loads of content so that that can boost their sales and marketing back here in the UK. That would be a perfect instance of potentially using this lens to create some VR content, because certainly with travel, as people know, but particularly when you're using I guess public transport or flying, you're so limited with what you can take. I'm going to be taking the R5 anyway, because that's a really small camera that I can use and take in hand luggage and so on. It can stay with me and won't get broken in the hold of the plane, etc. So I'm going to be taking that camera anyway. All it is for me is just putting in another lens in the bag, and already we can create some VR content, which obviously has never been possible before. That's one of the huge advantages of this, and certainly for, as I said, the potential other options for maybe using this VR footage in different ways for standard productions is also really interesting too. I think it's a bit of a game changer, really, for VR content.
And just to get back quickly about the workflow, just for me to understand it right. So you used the system, and then you load it onto your laptop, I'm guessing. What do you do then to get these kind of files to your clients? Like less work it is now with this new system compared to what you were working with before?
So in my experience with this lens, obviously on the camera side of things, all it is a case of attaching the lens, and the camera recognizes it. It's really great. The software on the camera, the firmware on the camera, actually recognizes that it's got this dual fisheye lens on it and adapts accordingly. So for things like focusing, it was just only doing it sort of on the one lens, rather than like trying to do it somewhere like in the middle or something, you know, in the space where there isn't an image. So it adapts immediately and makes it really easy for you to actually use it. Then it all records onto the media inside the camera. So either an SD card or a CF Express card. So in that sense, obviously like fairly normal workflow, obviously because if it's all on the R5, in my experience, it meant like not having to like, reformat the card for something like a special format or using another card, you know, because obviously on these high resolution cameras, you need fast cards, and fast cards aren't exactly cheap. They're getting cheaper, but they aren't cheap. We can all be honest about that. They still cost a lot because you have to have the speed and the quality and everything, the write speed, the read speed. So you can just continue using the same card and the same media that you've been shooting on, put that into your computer, offload it. And then on the software side, it does need converting. And I was sent the VR utility from Canon. You can then select the ones that you want to process. It takes a second just to kind of make sure that it's read it properly, and then you can convert it. There are options to change some of the ways that the footage will be processed. So as the guy said earlier, you can change like the roll and that kind of thing to make sure it's level, and then you export it. That didn't take me too long on. I've got a fairly recent laptop that I work on, and that processed it fairly quickly. It seemed pretty straightforward and totally in line with other VR systems that I've used. So, that was all good and pretty easy, to be honest. And sort of the software as well is really, easy to use. It's a proper interface. It's not like it's some like weird command line utility or something that you have to download or install like some weird dodgy way, like perhaps in the olden days. And you know, I've sat in like conference talks from guys that used to do VR with multiple cameras or like little action cams all on like a big rig. And, they would talk about like how they sent it off to special processing houses and stuff who would algorithmically do it.
Exactly. That's why I was asking. Yeah, because it used to be so like time consuming. When I did it, I couldn't even send it to the client myself. It had to go through like a processing person who would then stitch and do whatever to it.
Yeah, no, this is not like that at all. You still have to do a bit of processing, but it's easy to use. It's a sort of software that I would just install on all of the computers in my office, and I'd be like, anyone can do it, whether that's me or one of the team. I wouldn't even need to train them. They can just like click the button. It's that easy to use. It just gets you to open the files. It will load it up, and then you'll just kind of click the buttons to do the export. I think it gave me the option of what sort of formats I wanted to do it in as well. All in all, a pretty easy process and certainly not onerous. You know, if you've come from the sort of the much older VR type of systems, there's none of that awkwardness. And actually, one thing I will say just on that is like we've got a VR camera here that's got six lenses. And one of the things that we've found, particularly with doing movement stuff, is that you can get sort of like weird artifacts and stuff from optical flow and like where it tries to keep it steady and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But where this is just the two lenses, I didn't find that there were any problems like that with it. It was really quite straightforward.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Rowan. Thanks so much for sharing your experiences, and thanks as well to Mark and John for all the background on this amazing new system. Thanks so much, and I'm looking forward to using this myself actually after hearing so much about it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And now joining us is Mary Matheson, a VR director and executive producer with a wealth of expertise in 360 and 180 immersive storytelling. Hello, Mary, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
Could you tell us how you kind of got into VR?
Yeah, sure. Really, for most of my career, I've been a foreign correspondent, or I've made films abroad in developing countries or in post-conflict zones. So, you know, often I work with NGOs or charities making films for impact. So I was always kind of exploring new ways of telling stories, you know, for a UK audience or an American audience, you know, to try and get them interested in these foreign stories, basically. So I used to use, you know, different techniques to try and tell them the same story they might well have heard before, right? And then in 2015, I watched a film by the UN called Clouds Over Sidra, which was about a young Syrian girl in a refugee camp in Jordan. And that was in a Google Cardboard. So that was the first time that I watched VR. And I was completely blown away by the fact that I was transported to this refugee camp and just sitting next to this girl and hearing her story directly from her. So, you know, for me, that was a really extraordinary moment where I kind of realized the power of VR. And then actually I was invited to direct my first VR film for a charity called Plan International in Sierra Leone. So that was the first time that I directed in VR.
I actually also work for NGOs, and I've only used VR once because it was quite a hassle back then to figure it out. It was in a refugee camp, and I just remember I was feeling quite bad that I didn't really have the technology down yet. But I think a lot has changed now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what's incredible is just how the technology is changing all the time. So if you think, like, I was watching that in a, you know, I had a little Google Cardboard and, you know, it was the quality is pretty bad, as you say. But now suddenly we're talking about shooting in 8K, right? And the resolution is just incredible, the difference. And it's really not that far. I mean, we're talking only 6 years that I've been working in this. So yeah, it's really changed a lot.
So what is it exactly that you like so much about the stereoscopic or 3D VR experience? Is it that it's immersive, that you, like you said, you're sitting next to a refugee and you feel like she's talking to you? Or are there any other aspects that you feel make this so amazing?
I mean, I think the most extraordinary thing about it is that when you experience VR, we talk about it as an experience as opposed to just watching, right? Because you actually feel like you're there. So, you know, another thing that we kind of talk about and that you try and achieve when you're creating a VR experience is to allow your audience to feel actually present in the scene. So we talk about presence. And when you have stereoscopic, really, that sort of creates that real life scene for your viewer. So, in terms of sort of feeling present, you the 3D image basically takes you directly into that story. So, you know, you're no longer kind of just watching a 2D flat screen. You're actually walking through the screen, right, and into the story. And so, you feel like you're actually there. And the stereoscopic images really, really sort of give you that feeling in a way that monoscopic just doesn't quite have the same effect.
No, you're right. No, it's definitely a different experience. And you're right saying that we are calling it an experience. It truly is something else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's been, you know, quite a few studies now looking into how your brain takes in the information from when you're watching a VR experience, you know, and it's very different. It sort of enters your brain in a very different way to the way that you know, images watching traditional TV enter your brain. So it becomes almost like a memory for you. So, yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
And what do you wish that more people would understand about VR that they don't yet? I think actually a lot of people haven't experienced watching VR yet, right? If I look at, for instance, my neighbors probably haven't used it yet or seen it yet.
I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think it's becoming much more democratic, you know, now that the headsets are much better quality. It's not just something that's really for gaming. So, you know, the fact that you can sort of buy a headset now for $300 or $400, and actually you get really great quality. You can watch, you know, 4K or 8K in the headset. So I think that has made a really big difference. But I think that there's still a little bit of reticence around people. You know, I think they think it's a bit fiddly. to sort of put the headset on. They don't really quite know how to sort of maneuver it. I think they think that it's for gaming, but actually, it's very simple. I mean, my 88-year-old mum watches my work. She absolutely loves it. You know, it takes actually, the elderly are a really amazing new audience because, of course, you can take them back in time, right? I mean, the great thing about VR is that you can transport people to either another place or another time. And so for the elderly, it's actually a really sweet way of sort of taking them back to a particular era that they, you know, maybe when they were children. Pre-war or something like that, you know. And so for the elderly, it's a really beautiful thing for them because they get to sort of go back to a time maybe when they were much younger. So, you know, for example, there are several VR experiences that are about wartime. Or, you know, you might have a ballerina, an elderly woman who was a ballerina, and she gets to experience what it's like to be back on stage dancing as a ballerina again. So, you know, it's being used actually by, you know, all ages. It's not just for gamers. And I, you know, that's really what I was kind of wanting to get across, really, is that I think sometimes people think that VR is only for young gaming men, and actually it's not. It's used by all kinds of audiences now that it's sort of more possible to get hold of a really good headset.
So true. Yeah, and I once photographed elderly using or watching VR experiences, like nature scenes. And they were in a dementia care facility. I photographed this for the New York Times, and I remember it ended up on the front page because back then it was really a big thing that elderly people were using VR to be like kind of calm down, and it was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what's kind of cool though, isn't it? Because you don't really expect it. You know, normally you're expecting it to be a young guy playing some kind of cool game with a headset on. So to sort of see, you know, a white-haired little old lady in a headset is really intriguing. Then you want to watch what she's watching, right? Exactly. You want to see what she's seeing.
So true. So earlier on, you briefly mentioned the resolution, the higher resolution, or the 8K as well. So what is it that excites you about this higher resolution in the 180-degree VR?
You know, 180 for a start is really interesting for me because a lot of the work I do is 360. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of restrictions around that in itself, you know, because obviously as a, you know, the crew, we can't be seen. So, you know, you spend a lot of time in post-production sort of either trying to get rid of whoever was in the scene that you don't want to be there, or, you know, trying to get rid of the tripod and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What's great about 180 is that you don't really have to worry about that because obviously you've just got the super wide lens. You know, having the higher resolution itself is just game changing. You know, it really is. I think when you're talking about getting out to larger audiences, you know, people are used to watching high definition on their TVs, right? They're used to very clear images. So if you put them in a headset and it's all a bit blurry, they think there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, and again, going back to that aim that we have of sort of creating this feeling of presence that you're, as the viewer, that you're actually there in the scene, you obviously want the highest resolution that you can have. So, you know, for me as a filmmaker, it's really revolutionary to have that level. I've never shot in 8K before.
It's amazing, right? It's really, especially when you will be watching this in a VR, because it's like you're standing there. It's so real.
Yeah, and as you were saying, like imagine you're standing next to a tiger, or you know, if those sort of natural history kind of films that you might see, to sort of have the tiger like walk up to you, I mean, would be really scary actually, but kind of fun, you know, too, right? Because you know you're safe.
Yeah.
But that sort of high resolution would create that feeling of being there right next to it, okay? You know, in a way that if the images is just slightly lower, you're just not quite as convinced. The sort of suspension of belief that you have isn't as great.
Yeah, so true. So like Rowan, you also use a working sample of the Canon Jewel fisheye lens. Can you tell a little bit what the experience was like, but also what you were producing? What did you make?
Yeah, so we were making a short little documentary about a grandmaster of Muay Thai, which is a martial art from Thailand. The grandmaster had very humble beginnings. His father was killed when he was 8 years old, and his mother had a nervous breakdown. So he was sort of sent to live with Buddhist monks. So he had a kind of, the story's a bit like, you know, the Karate Kid kind of thing, where he's sort of taught how to meditate, and he was taught all these kind of exercises that seemed to be really useless, but actually it was all about, having a strength of mind as well as a strong body and all this kind of thing. And so anyway, he then became very successful as a Muay Thai boxer, and ended up, you know, being a stuntman in LA for a bit, and then brought Muay Thai to the UK. So he was one of the first people to bring it here in the 70s. And he's really pretty famous in the UK and certainly amongst that sort of martial arts, group. Mm-hmm. So, but he now kind of lives in the Forest of Dean. And so we wanted to sort of capture him, practicing the art, obviously, teaching it, and then also just in this incredible sort of setting as well. So, I mean, the great thing about the Jewel Fisheye lens was that, it was able to capture all of these scenes that we were trying to convey different parts of his life, So we sort of captured him in a gym, and the lens is great for that because obviously it's so wide, you can really see the full gym, but equally you can get in close and feel like you're almost being hit, right? At one point. I mean, and that was kind of one of the things that I really wanted to play with was, that feeling that he's coming towards you and sparring with you.
While you were filming, he was then standing right in front of you, pretending to kind of, like he would be super close to you then, right? Or not? Like how far would he have to be?
We had him about, so his fist when he finally finishes is about 50 centimeters, between 50 centimeters and 1 meter away from you, which is really close. Super close. But really fun as well, right? Because, and he wasn't standing, he was moving. So we actually got him moving towards us. And that's what's great about 180 as well. And working with this lens as well, it was able to sort of capture that movement, in a really playful way, but with real clarity. So a little bit of you thinking, oh my God, is this guy going to hit me? But you kind of know it's not, and partly the music that I used as well. I really wanted it to be sort of kind of a bit like a sort of kung fu movie kind of, those 70s kung fu movies. Yeah. So, with a combination of everything, I kind of wanted to play a bit with that so that you felt that he could hit you, but he wasn't really going to,
And have you already seen, probably you have seen people watching it? And I was just curious if they are like ducking away or like moving their head.
We haven't had a chance to see it. I think they're going to be releasing it in a couple of weeks. So they're going to be demonstrating it.
Oh.
I'd really like to see that part of it. Will be fun.
Yeah, but I'm guessing it will happen, right? Because you really, with VR, you just have the feeling it's just happening right in front of you. There's almost no, there's no difference kind of with the real world. It's so real.
Totally. So with some other experiences I've made, there was one that I made where I was actually getting the viewer to walk through a portal in the scene. Mm-hmm. And as they walk through, they then end up flying. So you're actually flying above a city, Medellin in Colombia. And some people loved it. They felt that they were suddenly flying and they sort of were screaming with joy.
Oh,
and other people were really scared and sort of grabbed my hand. And, they were just, So, but it was kind of thrilling, So part of them was like, oh my God, I'm flying, am I going to fall? And no, you don't fall, obviously. That is what's fun because then you realize you've got it, you've actually you know, achieved that feeling that they're there, right?
Yeah. I actually went, this reminds me of a VR experience that I saw this last summer at a photo festival. And it was, there was a sea rise, or it was like a lake, and the lake was rising and you were standing right in the middle of it. And while it was rising, I was getting the feeling I was drowning. How weird is that? I mean, I'm standing on land in a studio, like in a museum, actually. And while the water was going up and up, I saw it going like higher, higher, higher. And I just felt I had to like swim to stay alive. It's really what, that's what I feel makes it, or makes VR so powerful. So what do you feel makes a good VR film? Cause there's so many tricks you can kind of do, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I'm thinking about what to, you know, what shots to take, or what stories to, you know, what part of the story to focus on. I mean, in terms of the story, like I always work really closely with my characters to try and get them to also contribute. So I try and co-create as much as I can, because that's when you often find a magical piece of, you know, a part of their story that I would never have imagined, because I don't know what their story was. I didn't grow up in Thailand. I've got no idea what it was like to be brought up by a Buddhist monk. So, you know, I have my assumptions. Obviously I watched Karate Kid, but those are not the best ways, right, to approach a story. So number one for me is always make sure that the story is credible, and it's not me imposing my views. And I really try and draw that out of them if I can.
Yeah.
But then in terms of the visuals as well, like with VR, you want to really either find something. I try and find something that I know that the audience won't have experienced before. So, you know, I was shooting in South Sudan, and I was just in a village, and I'm sure it sounds like you've traveled a lot as well. So in Sudan, cows are really precious and they're really quite holy. So, you know, everybody gives the cows, they sort of bathe them in dust. I mean, it's beautiful to watch actually, and very filmic. So I just like stuck my VR camera in the middle of the cows, and while they were just bathing them in the dust one day. And of course, then the cow comes up, they're really interested in the camera, and ends up licking the camera lens, right? And actually that was an incredible moment, because, you know, you kind of then felt like what it was like to be licked by a cow. It was felt real. I mean, it was again, just like a real sort of comedy moment. But it wouldn't really have happened in real life. And how many people get the chance to go to South Sudan and actually experience that? Or so I guess it's those sorts of things where you're trying to find a moment or a scene or a location and create that feeling and create the scene that, you know, that the audience might not have experienced before.
Yeah, that's amazing with the cow. I would love to see that actually, or experience it even better. So with the film that you worked on with the Canon Jewel Fisheye, as you said, it was filmed in the Forest of Dean in the western part of the UK. So I can imagine with the forest, that just being a perfect location for VR, because I mean, you could probably kind of feel the trees almost because they're everywhere around you. But what made it for you that this location worked so well, and what were the challenges as well in a place like that?
Yeah, so the forest was just stunning. You couldn't have sort of, if you were to imagine what an enchanted forest looks like, that's what it looks like, because the colors were just so green. They were covered in moss, and they had these incredible roots and branches. And, you know, we got Grandmaster Sken to, you know, sit in the middle of the forest and meditate. So the opening scene is him wearing this bright red outfit right next to the green of the forest. And it just was sort of breathtaking to view. And actually, you know, going back to the lens and going back to the high resolution and having viewed the footage, really, it was more than I thought it would be in terms of, you know, the color, especially. So it was just beautiful to look at afterwards. You know, that was in terms of the beauty that was there, and it was apparent, and, you know, you really did feel like you were kind of in some kind of martial arts film when he's sort of you know, doing his moves and showing us, you know, how he spars with us and that kind of thing. In terms of the challenges, we were shooting in early November in the UK, so actually in Wales, so it was a little bit cold. He's now 66, so you don't really want to make an older guy like that, you know, be in the cold for too long, although he was incredible. And also, you know, he has incredible balance, so I really wanted to show him balancing as he was walking across some of the these little stepping stones. And but I did feel quite nervous about that because it was slippy, you know, it's a forest, you can imagine. So you know, there were some challenges. It was kind of dark because it was a British winter, the sky was gray. If there had been a bit of sunshine, that would have really you know, brought another level to the visuals. But I don't think we suffered, actually. You know, I look forward to you seeing it and see what you think.
Yeah, I would really, really love to see it. It just sounds so mystical and amazing. It's really, yeah, I really would love to see it. So with the new lens, with that dual fisheye, were there actually also shots that you now were able to shoot that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of moving shots so that the film would feel dynamic. Mm-hmm. I really like to move the camera anyway, even in 360, but in 360 it's a real challenge because you know, as the viewer you feel sick quite a lot. You've got to be very careful about moving the camera. Whereas with this, we were able to move it a lot, so you could feel the sort of point of view aspect really well. So in those moments where he was sort of play fighting with us or whatever, it was great because we could move backwards, so there was movement, you know, and again it sort of created that feeling of presence.
So this was all handheld, right?
Yep.
Okay, wow. You had it steady on a gimbal then, or how?
That's right, yeah we used a gimbal, but that kind of included moving, you know, around him because he sort of talks about meditation in motion, where you do a kind of dance as you're, you know, warming up and you're meditating before you actually have a fight. And we moved the camera around him sort of sideways, which is something that I just would never do normally. I would never do that normally because it would just be too uncomfortable for the viewer. So yeah, it kind of just gave us a lot of freedom. It meant that I could also view, I was able to monitor much more easily as the director. You know, often sometimes the technology fails, right? And if you're shooting 360, you can't be seen by the camera. You can't see and therefore be seen by the camera. You know, right. So
that's such a struggle. You have to be behind a tree and then you can't see. Yeah,
exactly. You're sort of crossing your fingers basically for the shots. Whereas this meant I could just be there and it was really straightforward, and I was right behind the DOP as he was shooting it. And it just made our lives a lot easier. It made, you know, it was really pretty liberating.
Is there any new VR project you're going to be working on with this technology or with this lens? Because it sounds like what I really like about you talking about VR is that it seems like you know so many different ways of using it. Because that's what I've seen as the main, not issue, issue is not the right word, but VR in the beginning was used by so many people. And a lot of the things that it was used for wasn't necessarily needed. That's what I felt as a viewer. While you are naming things that I'm like, wow, if you use it like this, then it's amazing, you know? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, I'm working on a series, which is it's like showcasing solutions to climate issues and climate problems. And again, it's just a really kind of fun way of introducing people to these stories. I think, you know, I think a lot of the work that I've been around can be quite serious and people can feel a little bit browbeaten, whereas actually VR sort of allows you to kind of humanize what you're talking about, and it but not necessarily in a sort of serious emotional way, let's say. It can also be really playful. You might have a serious message, but it's not, you know, it can make it just much more real. So we've got lots of, there are sort of some really fun stories we've got. There's one that's about this great Italian architect who is sort of building green buildings in Milan and in China. And so you've got like these incredibly tall buildings with, you know, beautiful plants growing out of them. Or, you know, we shot something recently in Medellin in Colombia, which was about the greening of that city. And that was incredible, sort of filming, working with the gardeners. You know, you can really get in and film right next to them planting trees or plants, as well as sort of being able to go up to their homes with them. And they sort of live in the shanty towns around Medellin, which is sort of in this bowl. And you know, you can sort of capture the intimacy of sort of being in someone's shack, basically, and learning a little bit about their life and why this is important to them. So you've kind of got this dual thing going on where you've got very beautiful kind of close-ups of plants or being in a house, but yet also you've got these incredible kind of wide shots where you see the expanse of a whole city, you know.
It sounds so beautiful. I really, I really wish I could watch it all already. Thanks so much for sharing all of this with us. Exciting to hear you being so enthusiastic as well. About VR and about telling stories in a way that, yeah, I think you used the word humanizing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's beautiful because that's what it is. That one time that I did VR in a refugee camp in Greece a couple of years ago, I remember people were watching it and they said, now that I've sat in a tented camp like that, a refugee camp, now I kind of understand better what the life is like there. And I'm not, you know, like they kind of changed their perspective even on refugees and on the crisis. It's amazing what it can do. Yeah, I guess humanizing is the good word.
Yeah, and it's just really hugely powerful. So yeah, I'd love to know what you think. So I hope that you get to see it.
Yes,
and you need to get someone to film you watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's also the fun part with VR, to watch people watching VR videos.
Exactly. It's fun.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Mary, for your time. This was really lovely. Thanks so much for sharing all that you know.
Yeah, lovely to chat to you too.
Well, that brings to a close another episode of Shutter Stories. Thanks so much to my guests, John, Mark, Rowan and Mary, for sharing their first-hand experiences with the new lens. And please keep an eye on our Canon Europe YouTube channel, where you'll be able to watch the Canon documentary film about the Muay Thai boxing grandmaster. Thanks so much to you at home for listening. Please join us again next time.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can rate and subscribe in the episode's listing. If you have any thoughts or feedback on today's episode or the podcast as a whole, why not reach out to us on social media? You'll find our details in the description below. We'd love to hear from you.